Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And we're talking with Keith Mullen. He is the CEO of Mullen Associates, Lincolnshire International, out of New York City. Keith, thanks for being back on the show today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. Hey, you know, it's funny. We had you on about a year ago. We talked a lot about outplacement and coaching trends back then. What has changed since about a year ago?
You know, the outplacement trends continue to increase, in which good companies are really looking to outplacement as part of the solution with regards to how they manage their workforce. And in today's environment, good companies, that those that appear on the best places to work, that win the awards for quality of life and the kind of environment that they wish to be, and they do that in order to attract the talent, but they're recognizing more so than ever that how they treat you not only during the hiring process, but during the process of while you're there and growing and learning, but also should you exit. And a great example of that is a client company of mine that we're working with to strengthen the ties using our outplacement services and our technology to connect and reconnect with those that are leaving and those that are alumni.
Why is that important to a company? Why would they be worried about the alumni of an organization when, you know, they can say, well, you know, they're not here anymore? Why is that important to an organization?
You know, Dave, it comes down to social media. People are talking about their experiences at companies. They're talking about what it was like to work there. They're talking about the products, the services that were provided to the customer. And smart companies realize that those conversations are indeed taking place, and if they're going to be successful tomorrow, that they've got to stay in touch with those that had a good experience and maybe even those that had less than an ideal experience at their company to give them a chance to really brand themselves, to reinforce the culture that they wish, to reinforce their image as to who they want to be and are in the marketplace. So I think it comes down to social media. It's how that's being used. It's the conversations taking place, and smart companies realizing they've got to engage that audience, and they don't just have to engage them while they're employees. They need to engage them before, during, and after.
I think it also plays a role that we're seeing more and more companies bring back talent that maybe due to the lean times, they had to let some talent go. And now they're saying, hey, things are starting to pick up, and I'd like to bring back that candidate, bring back that person. And so that engagement matters.
It's so true. We have a client, J.P. Morgan, that considers themselves one of the best banks to work for. If you look at their most recent annual report, the chairman's letter includes that conversation just about not only those that have been impacted because of business changes and the effort that they're making around what they call transition redeployment, or TR, but also their ability to hire alumni back who come in with a knowledge of the bank, how it works, and the marketplace it competes in. Because maybe they weren't able to get that experience while employed, and they left, got that experience, and become even more valuable to the bank on the way back in.
We're also seeing this in nonprofit environments. Are you seeing that as well?
A little bit. I work with one of the major nonprofits, a great, great organization, the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. And they have a unique model, and their model is to partner with organizations that are developing compounds to treat the disease, and they're helping to fund that development. They are closely working with people that not only have been part of their organization, but have filtered through the pharmaceutical side to the research side, back to their organization, and back out again. So they've maintained a very strong connection to their alumni, their employees, you know, their mission. It's a really unique organization. So I do see smarter companies and nonprofits really, really taking a hold of this in a way that probably hasn't happened in the last few years. And I think it's definitely related to technology.
Well, we're talking about technology, and certainly in the next segment on this show, we're going to get into more in depth on the technology changes that are out there. But let's stick with social media for a second, because I think we have certainly LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and the ability for employees to be able to talk about their employers, or former employees as well, be able to talk about their employers. Do you see companies trying to say, hey, with these severance agreements or these things, that they're trying to put a hold on employees, or are they really focused on doing the right thing initially so that they don't have to worry about it?
That's a great question. I think, you know, that goes back and forth. I honestly think there's some companies out there that are putting it in place for risk mitigation, which is fine. But I think other companies, and the ones that really are engaged in the consumer and selling to the consumer or providing a service or a good to that person, they're much more focused on that in total employee life cycle. I mean, we used to think of a life cycle as a circle, but I think a lot of these companies think of it as a straight line now. They're hiring people, they're developing people, they're exiting people, and they may rehire that person at some later point in time. I think they're really looking at how do we do more, how do we engage our consumers better. And in order for us to do that, we need to have the people in the right place with the right support, the right skills. I mean, heavy emphasis on, I just talked to one of our candidates today, Dave, who was being interviewed for reestablishing and strengthening the entire university program for a major bank. And, you know, they had one in place. They maybe got rid of a little bit of that. Maybe their business is stabilizing or strengthening. And now they're looking at, okay, we need to do more for our employee population while they're here. And we need to use that information to be able to recruit more effectively as well, because I just don't know that they're saying, or they may not be saying, or they're saying, we may just not be getting the right talent in the door fast enough and keeping them here long enough.
Well, you know, the war on talent that companies and recruiters and people have been talking about for years. They've been saying that, hey, the war on talent's coming. And the reality is that we all believe that, you know, the economy certainly slowed down the progression of that for a period of time. But the reality is, it is true. Great talent will always be a war for. And you want to be able to connect to that individual and make sure that the social fabric of that person, that when they read about you, when they know about you, it's now become, whether right or wrong, it's now become how people write about you on the web and on social media matters. And more companies have to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, the war on talent is definitely even more so for the top 10% of the employee population that you really want to attract. So those people are in a really great position. The others need to do a better job in terms of how they can position and strengthen themselves in the marketplace. And companies care. They care about what's being said about them. You know, I was at a major client last week who typically you may not think that would be their perspective, but they greatly care about what's being said about them. And one of their big concerns was their current inability to respond to all the applications they get for openings. And they think that's a real branding issue for them. So they're worried that they have these great jobs at all levels, entry level to senior, and they're worried that they can't respond quick enough to those that are applying with more than just a note that says, we've got your application. I mean, they're worried that they're missing the right people, so they're really working on how do we engage those people, even the ones that we don't want to hire at this time, in a way that promotes our brand. So they care. Smart people, smart companies in the talent management process are really looking at that whole cycle, from how do I engage somebody from the moment that I put an open job out there or source it, to the hiring, to the onboarding, to the development, and again to the next stage of their career, whether it's here or elsewhere, into a transition role or not. That's a big, big deal, I think, going forward, especially in a competitive environment that we live in today.
Well, you know, I just last month went to an HR convention in Maine, and certainly we've talked about it on the show. But the fact is that people were really talking about talent and great talent and how to attract great talent. And I will tell you, we heard more often than not, it was how to re-attract some of the talent they had to let go. And that, to me, was an interesting statement, right? Because the fact is that they didn't want to necessarily have to do that, but they had no choice based upon some of the situations and some of the, you know, the hiring that had to be done. And I talked to a number of CEOs who said flat out, we have to find and get back some of that talent we lost as hard as that may be. And because we did it right, in other words, provided them career transition services or some sort of severance or some way to make it happen, I feel confident, his words, in going out and talking to them again. That's a big impact.
It's even before you even get to those services, Dave. It's the conversation you had leading up to that with the employee in terms about their performance and what's expected of them. You know, it's the conversation you have with the manager who's in charge of that person, giving him or her the ability to not only get their job done, but to communicate with that employee that says, here's what we expect, here's the performance criteria, here's what's objective, here's what's subjective, here's how you're rewarded, here's how you can be impacted conversely. So that way, that whole talent management process from end to end today is everything, because I think, as I looked at the people, the candidates, maybe this isn't out there as much, but I just sit there and talk to candidates that are being interviewed for jobs or going through the process, and they're looking at it, right? They're saying to themselves, yeah, I need a job, but is this a place that I want to work? You know, is this a place where I'm willing to put in the time and effort to be successful and sacrifice weekends or travel or time with the kids at the ballpark on a Wednesday night when I want to watch a game and I can't because I'm committed to this? And am I going to make those commitments and choices? Or am I going to take the job and do what I need to do to get by for the next year or so and ride out this market and use that as a springboard to something else? You know, I don't know. But I think good companies are starting to really recognize that, especially as the economy, while still in at least where I'm calling you from in New York, you know, New York City is still relatively flat. I mean, we only produced in April 30-some-odd hundred jobs. In a city of 7 million with a population of that size, we're only producing 30-some-odd hundred jobs. That's not a big market growth right now. So candidates have got to be really smart about how they position themselves, and companies have got to be really smart to attract the right talent.
When you're talking to a candidate and you're asking them, you know, what it is that they're really looking for in a company, what are the top couple things you're hearing right now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I hear so much about culture. What is this place like to work? What do they stand for? What do they do? What's their business practices? A lot about profits and margins. Do they make money? How much money do they make? What's the size of their market? What's their position against and relative to their peers? You know, do they have a lot of new product introductions? What's fueling their growth? What's the immediate management team that I'd be responsible for? Do I'm checking, you know, so much, you probably have seen this too, Dave, right? So much of the interviews. So the average candidate we have right now is going through 8 or 10 interviews, right? So those companies are checking these people out long before they even get in the door, then putting them through these extensive interview processes. What we're seeing on the other end is the candidates checking out the person that they're going to be interviewing with as well, using LinkedIn to find out who's connected to who, what's that person's reputation, and is that something that I should be going after as well? And that's motivating and demotivating some, right? And even in this environment, yes, people need to work, but I think a little different than even 10 years ago was they're not willing just to work anymore. They want something in return. And it's not only pay, but it's a good environment. It's a place to be, to feel confident in. It's a place to feel good about. I see more and more of that than I've ever seen before. You know, 10 years ago, 5, 6 years ago, people just wanted to get that job, get more money, added responsibility, and kind of keep showing that progression. Today, they still want that, but they want the other stuff layered in as well, potentially.
We're talking with Keith Mullen, CEO of Mullen Associates out of New York City. And we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Keith Mullen. He is the CEO of Mullen Associates, Lincolnshire International, out of New York City. Keith, we've been talking about outplacement during the first segment. What I want to talk a little bit about in terms of this second segment is the technology side. We've certainly talked a lot about the candidates looking at social media. We've talked about companies looking at social media. But talk to me a little about where you're seeing technology driving career transition over the next year or two.
Great point, and that's the big debate within the industry, Dave, as you may be aware of, in terms of how is technology going to impact us. And I think from the perspective of the candidate in the job search mode, there is so much technology available to this person that they simply today have little ways of aggregating it and coordinating it into a single asset. Right now, it's a series of uncoordinated tools that they have to visit, revisit, and somehow figure out a way to aggregate. The smart job seekers are aggregating that information and putting it into their own dashboards. We, of course, have a system built around doing just that. But they're using technology to do better research on their targeted companies. They're creating smarter, targeted, focused approach. They're doing their research up front that tells them about the company, its new products, its profit margins, and where they're making money. But they're also looking at their organizational structures of those companies, using social media sites such as LinkedIn to figure out how they may or may not be connected to that company. And they're having those conversations with key people before they even get into those interviews to create interviews. So they're using technology to be more productive in their networking. They're using technology to be more engaged with understanding the business climate and understanding the issues any one company may or may not face, their industry and key competitors, and their organizational structure, learning more about how these people are put together so that I may understand how I may fit into that company. Because, David, you and I know strangers don't hire strangers, but if I have to also not only get to know you and change my organization structure to bring you in, that's a difficult, difficult task. So I think they're using technology to be a lot smarter and productive in how they go about targeting companies and getting interviews.
No, I agree 100%. And certainly what we're seeing as well is use of social media, not only through LinkedIn, which is clearly the premier place that right now is being used. There's no question about it. LinkedIn is right now the key place, and we'll talk about LinkedIn in a few seconds. But some of the other things that we're seeing is employees, or candidates in this case, trying to figure out what the culture is of an organization through social media. They're looking at employees that are either on Facebook or on Twitter, or actually now we're even seeing it in some of the other smaller sites to try to determine what exactly it's all about. They'll go to YouTube. They'll go to Instagram. They'll go to some of the other places and really just look around and see what are these people saying about the company. And that wasn't happening years ago. That wasn't even happening a couple years ago. They were using it for social media, looking for networking, but now they're actually researching for if you would call the culture of a company as well.
Well, look, there's an abundance of information on Twitter about any publicly traded company, and even privately held ones. But with the rulings in the courts a few weeks back with regards to companies being able to put out public data using Twitter as a mechanism for that, anyone who doesn't have a Twitter handle or hashtag, and anyone who doesn't follow companies that they might be interested in on Twitter is just not getting the current information, and not all of it's going to be relevant, but an awful lot of it will be. And there's analyst tracking companies that are putting out reports and information as well on those companies through Twitter. Yeah, companies want to see you on it. They don't necessarily know that, you know, they want to know that you have a point of view. It depends on your discipline, too. If you're in banking, you might be restricted, but if you're in media, you're not going to be as restricted, so you might need to have a point of view and how to use that. So I think you're right, Dave. The LinkedIn is obviously critical. Twitter, Instagram, all of these sites, Glassdoor, all of these sites lend an element to not only you understanding the company's culture, but understanding their business competitive threats. And it gives an idea of a company to say, yeah, this guy or gal is pretty current. They're up there as well. So they're not afraid of technology, and more importantly, they might even embrace new technology, which I think is a message that all candidates have to send today's prospective job the hiring companies.
No, I think you're right. I think when I, and I know you do as well, talk to hiring managers, they need people who are tech savvy. They need people who are willing to adopt new technology and not be afraid of it. They need people who are willing to be on the cutting edge of what exactly it is they're doing and be up to date on it. Even whether it's manufacturing, whether it's banking, whether it's finance, whether it's any area, they need that because it's all about technology today. And so this is kind of a snapshot of how people look at themselves, how they act, and what they're all about. And if you're not there, then the question now becomes, and this is the words I'm using, why aren't you there? And that's right. The question we're hearing. Why aren't they there? Rather than years ago, it used to be, oh, they may not be there, it's okay. Now it's, why aren't they there? You hearing the same?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think the company has a right to say that because they're saying basically the way I kind of always think about that is they're saying, why aren't you there? And if you're not there, how readily are you able to adapt and adopt new stuff, whatever that may be? And if you can't do that here with this, then I'm not sure that I have a lot of confidence in your ability to do that for tomorrow. And I think that's especially true for your mid-career plus type worker who has 20 or so great years, but if they can't demonstrate that adaptability, then... Well, that's above my pay grade, that word.
Yeah, it's a big word.
It's a big word. I got to go practice it later. they're going to say to you, I'm going to find somebody else that might be a little cheaper, in fact. You know, I had a long conversation with a candidate today about the ability to use technology and how to do this and why weren't you there, but then also about pay. And the pay conversation was, well, I know you make X, but the companies that you're targeting, the ideal conversation really is at what level are they bringing you in potentially, and what impact or results do they expect, and all that you're asking to be is to be paid at a level that's consistent with that band of peers, not what you were or weren't making, and maybe what you were making was below where they are, but you can't go in there laying out all these parameters and not be technically savvy today. Companies feel they have choice, though. They really do. Even though we talk about being employer of choice in the earlier part of our conversation, companies today are a little more concerned about the visibility of their business despite the most recent quarterly earnings. They're not really clear on some directions, and so therefore they're looking at ways not to make the hire until they absolutely have to make the hire. Short of that, they just... they kind of think they can get it done, and that's the mode they're in right now. They're sitting on their cash. They're protecting for whatever next downturn may or may not come.
No, you're absolutely right. With technology today, companies obviously are looking for career transition programs that can help their employees aggregate all the choices that are out there for social media and bring it all together in one. Tell me how you think a program, for example, like Career Workspace, one through Lincolnshire International, can really help an employer understand how they can help their employees with career transition.
I think when we talk to the human resource group within companies and they're looking at how best to manage that process, technology obviously is a key component. I think what Career Workspace has done, based upon the results which have reinforced our development of it and the application, has been to coordinate uncoordinated assets from research through social media, through the ability to interact with our team on an on-the-go basis. But what it really does for the candidate who is in the job search mode is not only aggregating the tools and putting in a single spot all of the information they would need to understand a target, which is a company they're going after, their network, the information relative to that, and how to approach it, but our tool also acquaints them, familiarizes them with those social media tools. Because even now, more often than not, people come in without having done much of that. For example, LinkedIn, big issue. Even with its 200-plus million users worldwide, I would argue that 75% of the people that come in with their LinkedIn profile here is underdeveloped. And they don't appreciate how LinkedIn rates them on their system and what they're looking for and how that information then is used to help companies who are using the system to search. By putting all of your search tools in one place, you are familiarizing and getting the candidate comfortable with what is it like to use social media, what is it like to engage with social media. Many of our interviews today are three-step process, phone screen, video chat, and then maybe if they pass that, a face-to-face with a series of people. The average candidate through the last 6 months of this most recent 6 months, their average number of interviews in our office is somewhere between 8 and 10. So there's 8 or 10 people that can say no to them, and not any one of them individually might have the power to say yes. There's often the screening process, which includes a video conference. Our technology is pulling all of that in so that the candidate can interact with our team, video chat. They can self-record preparing for interviews. They can create scripts so they have written word in terms of how they wish to present themselves. They can practice the delivery of that script as if it was a telephone conversation, so audio only. They're pulling in Twitter, pulling in LinkedIn, pulling in other resources that allow me to get as much information in as rapid time as I can on my company that I'll be interviewing with, even in real time walking into the interview. I'm pulling up my data. I'm looking at the Twitter feed. I'm following 20, 25 companies. And I know as much about them as the person that's about to interview me would know. And that, I think, is how career workspaces work so effectively for candidates, because it gives them the basic tools and harnesses the job boards on the web. It pulls through the research. It pulls through the Twitter, LinkedIn. It gives them a chance to practice not only with our team but individually and independently. It allows them to self-record. It allows them to view that recording to see how they come across and visually. So many of those interviews today are on video, as I had mentioned. That's a great way to familiarize yourself, how you look, how you sound, how you come across, what you're wearing, which matters, all of that. So the integration of all of these tools, which are independently out there somewhere on the web, but we're pulling them all together. You have a single landing page, and you can access and withdraw down from any one of those resources through a click. That's a big deal because it really saves time and energy and helps to focus our efforts.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampiFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Casco Bay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Casco Bay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Keith Mullen of Mullen Associates, Lincolnshire International. Keith, again, thanks for being on the show today.
So much appreciate you inviting me and being here today. Thank you.
So we've talked quite a bit in the first half of the show, a little bit about outplacement, a little about technology. I wanted to jump on this LinkedIn thing a little bit, because obviously LinkedIn continues to grow and continues to be, quote unquote, the place that professional candidates need to be. Could you provide maybe for our listeners some key things that they need to make sure that their profile is, make sure that they have on their profile? I think this would be helpful not only to candidates, but to professionals out there who may be thinking about going in the job market later or just want to see a professional profile.
Yeah, I think one of the most important elements within the LinkedIn profile is the top part of your profile, which contains your picture, and it contains your name and the position that you held or most recently held. Those three lines under your name are critical in terms of how LinkedIn searches and finds you. Your picture is important because LinkedIn is rating you in terms of how much you've filled out of their system, much like any other search engine. So you could be 50% filled out or 100% filled out. You obviously want to be as 100% or as close as possible to that, so that when a criteria is made for a search firm or elsewhere, your results will come up on the first landing page or the first results page. So I think what's really important is obviously your profile part up top that has what your position was, where you do it, and a little bit of that industry, and then previous employers and your education. That gives the audience, the reader, a quick snapshot. Then when you scroll down and you get down to the background section of the LinkedIn page, that summary section is important. And there we want to weave in as much results or impact that one can demonstrate or one can show. So if you're in a publicly traded company, you have obviously greater flexibility about reporting that. If you're privately held, some companies maybe require you not to talk about that, or you're not in a position. So if you can't show impact and results against the business environment, then you got to show some complexity of the processes that one's managed, the number of people, size, scope, scale, and so forth. Those two right up top are really important. Having out your jobs, of course, is important in the progression, having out your education, your skills. And in the skills section, if you can, I like to click off, you know, the appropriate ones, and not to be exclusive there, to be more inclusive. The more we have, not necessarily the better, but the more we have, the more likely you're to be sourced in a criteria or keyword criteria search. So I think that's really important. But that up top front, Dave, if you're asking me where I'm going to spend most of my time, I'm really going to get that top portion right, especially below your name where those three lines are, and you know how I'm describing myself there. That is going to set the stage for when the person reads you, because as you know, some people have full views, some people have partial views, and that may be what comes up.
People can post activity on LinkedIn. They can post and share an update, just like you would on any other social media. How do you counsel candidates on what they should post?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, posting a trip to some place is probably not the best the best posting. I think to have a presence, so if you're if you're a subject matter expert and you have a point of view or are expected to have a point of view, I think some postings make sense. I don't necessarily know that doing that every day makes sense, but I think some period, a month, once a month, something along those lines may be appropriate, where you there's a real issue, real commentary, or real something that you want to share. I've seen a lot of people, Dave, post things that they're taking a trip or they're working on here or they did this. That's too much. I don't think people want to see that, really. Remember, this is your professional tool to broadcast your who you want to be, who you're defining yourself as to a professional audience. I think you've got to keep that within your purview and use your updates and postings relative to that on a, depending on your subject matter and where you're supposed to be in that, frequent to, but not so frequent to an infrequent basis.
How about recommendations? You know, I've heard a lot in the last 6 months or so that people are a little concerned that recommendations are, you know, maybe just out there. They're not necessarily have the weight they used to have. Do you hear from candidates or clients that they're looking at the recommendations or, you know, again, is too much too much? How many recommendations? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I don't know that you have 50 recommendations that's going to drive someone to buy you or hire you. I actually have, the way I like to use recommendations is a slightly different perspective. If you're targeting a company and you've created or know of some people that might be responsible or in the area of your desired job, I like to look at those recommendations and see what those people are recommending that person for. What did they say about that person? And that might give you insight as to the type of work that's being done, the type of culture that they have, and how you might build a bridge to that person as well. So if I'm a candidate, I'm looking at recommendations of targeted companies of people that might hire me or be relative to my world in that environment. If I'm a candidate seeking recommendations, sure. I think having none in today's environment or just a few may look to be at a disadvantage compared to others that have many. But I don't think that, you know, having 50 is going to drive it that much. They might run the reverse reaction, which says, boy, this person spends an awful lot of time on LinkedIn. What else are they doing in their day job? So I think you have to just kind of balance that out a little bit. And then, as you know, Dave, bottom line is you don't have control over that as well, right? You probably get a number of recommendations yourself, and you say it's lovely, but you're not out soliciting that either. So I think they're always welcomed. But I think the better way to use them is really look at the recommendations of people in targeted companies to see what their kind of work they're doing, what they like, what they're talking about, and see if that can create a bridge for you. That's how I would use that.
No, I agree. I think one of the other things that I have seen a lot of is they now have this pop-up that comes up a lot when you go to a person. They say, endorse this person for XYZ, whatever it may be in their areas.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've said it, that endorsements are fine, but when they're by necessarily people you don't even know sometimes, you say to yourself, why exactly are they endorsing me for this? They don't even know who I am, or they don't know anything about me. So I do wonder sometimes about the effectiveness of endorsements. Not to saying they can't be effective in the sense of if when there's mass or bulk for a certain area, but I do question that.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a great point, because too many people create these relationships even on LinkedIn that they've never even met the person they're connected to. You know, I'm not a big fan of just connecting with people and having endorsements by people that we haven't really worked with or know. And I'm not a big fan of seeking out connections to people I've never met. It's much smarter, I think, to be able to say, I've met these people, I know them, they're meaningful, and what people don't do on LinkedIn, which they should do, is they build out these 500-plus, they're a super user, whatever, but they don't really work that audience. They're not actually out doing anything with those people, contacting them, sending them information, or nurturing that relationship. So they may have 500-plus, but, you know, they can't possibly manage that many. So you have to be smart about that. You do, once you have that many, you've got to nurture it. You've got to, it's your garden. You've got to water it, got to cultivate it, you got to look for it to grow.
The other section that I do know that I do talk about a little bit with, especially candidates, is the areas having to do with their experience, especially, but also the things they volunteer on. Because I do know in today's age, if you want to call it, companies are very keen on what you're doing in social media, what you're doing to give back. And I think that that has become more and more relevant, especially maybe for the younger generation who looks at these things and say, you know, what are they doing for me? What are the organizations you're part of? What are some of the things that you spend your time in, whether it be Cancer Society or Rotary or something? Are you seeing that still as important? I mean, I remember years ago, that was actually detriment. You'd be like, oh, you're spending time doing other things. Now it's almost a badge of honor that people are doing things for organizations.
Yeah. I mean, it's like my poor kid who's going into 10th grade and has to fill out her resume of all of the different organizations and social service hours she's doing and everything. Yeah, I think everybody's looking at that today. They're looking at where do you spend your time after work. But there's a downside to that. I mean, you know, for years I've seen people that are earlier in their career really engaging in that. And then the push-pull issue has been, in many cases, they may even start a family and have to spend more time devoted to raising their family and less time on the outside work volunteer activities. But and that gets in the way. I think when you can see that in resumes and they've done all this work and then for 10 years they didn't. I do think it's important. I do think it's important that you don't spread yourself so thin that you can't possibly meaningfully have an impact. But I think if you can pick out the one or two organizations or outside activities that really mean something to you and be able to talk to that with sincerity and commitment, that's a heck of a lot more powerful than having 10 things down that you're involved in, because I just don't think people believe that. I think they believe one or two. They don't believe 10.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Baa Black Sheep, have you any wool? No, sir, no, sir. Some nincompoop with pantyhose pulled over his face stole all my wool sweaters and gaming system. Luckily, the Geico Insurance Agency recently helped me with renter's insurance. Everything stolen was replaced, and the little boy who lives down the lane was caught trying to sell it online. Call Geico and see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
I'm in a state of caffeination, got all my fingers shaking, must have been my large Americano, mochaccino, macchiato. Now the family's gone to bed, and that's my favorite time to get some tips on better rates. Cause my State Farm guy answers late, and even when it's not my agent, someone's standing by so patient. Getting coverage questions answered helps me to relax. Get to a better state, State Farm.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we are talking with Keith Mullen. Keith, you know, one of the things we've been talking about this whole hour is really how a candidate can really maximize their potential when looking for a job. How about giving some candidates out there who are looking some ideas of how they can really do that and bring it all together?
You know, I that's thank you, Dave. I think that One, I think candidates need to realize that today companies feel they have just a lot of supply, just a lot of people that want to work for them, and especially the big big companies, and especially the smart mid-cap size companies. So I think if I'm a candidate, clearly define what your value proposition is. So be able to articulate succinctly what do you do, what are you responsible for, and what were the results of that responsibilities. So that's number one. Number two, you've got to create a target list. Everybody doesn't do it. It just amazes me. I've been doing this for 20 years, Dave, and 99% of the candidates come in and they don't create a target list of companies that I want to work at. And I say to them, why not? And they always are reacting versus proactively building relationships with companies that they think do great stuff, have a great product or service, and there's a way that they can fit in and support that endeavor. They don't do it. And then they think, well, there's 25. How do I do that? And it's, you can start with size, and you can start with what industry you came from, who are competitors. You can look at who are suppliers to the business that you came from. So who, where did your company buy things from? Where did your company sell things to? Right, we're all selling. Who sold, who bought what we made? Who did we buy from in order to make what we sell and provide? Looking at that, creating a target list, figuring out what their structure might be like, what are some of the business challenges they're up against. So am I a guy that helped integrate two disparate organizations into one with deep cultural roots? Maybe I can make that argument to a company that's acquired 10 businesses over the last 5 years and hasn't integrated them yet fully. Well, there might be some similarities there. So think through the targets, think through the business environment they're up against, how your background can or cannot fit into that, and be honest, right? Most times we're just not honest enough with ourselves, and we're just not. So be honest with yourself. What did I really do, and how can I really help these people, and how can I really add value to them? Create the target list, create your networking list, and then don't expect anything to happen. Just work it. The results are going to take care of themselves if you follow the process, Dave. And the process is be in front of people, be smart about your targets, learn as much as you can about them, create relationships there, and look for opportunities before they're real opportunities. Because if it's presented as a job out there, I was talking to a client yesterday, and they put it, last week, and they had an associate general counsel position. $900 million company, big brand. They had over 250 resume sent in on day one. Now, we happen to know somebody there. I have a candidate. We were able to make the phone call, and we bypassed all of that and got in to see the right people at the right time for the interview process. Didn't work out. It's not going to work out, I should say. But we bypassed all of that. So you have to have the relationships. You've got to build those relationships. And you don't ask them for things. You don't put your, if you hear of something, let me know. Most ineffective way to network, Dave. I think you're putting your audience in a yes-no position. If you hear of something, yes, tell me. Or if you don't know, and then I call you back up 2 weeks from now and say, did you hear of anything new? And that guy or gal says, no. Now what? But if you engage them in helping to solve your problem, talk about the market conditions, talk about unique ways companies are solving those issues, and how you did that in your previous roles. Now we're on the same side of the conversation. We're helping each other. We're having a conversation, a dialogue about solving problems. And so as things do present themselves, because they will, maybe then they'll remember me and they'll know exactly what I've done well. So they'll say, boy, you need to talk to Keith because he's really good at X. So I think a couple things people need to do. Don't overestimate your powers and realize it's a competitive marketplace, or don't overestimate your skill set. Two, create a target list of companies. Clearly be able to articulate what you were responsible for and the impact that you had. Identify the suppliers to your business and those that bought from your previous business, and use those as your starting point to create the targets. And feel affiliated for it. Is there something that I really like about what this company does that I can feel good about going to work there every day? Use that as part of your criteria. And then get out and network and talk to as many people as you can. And time will help you whittle that down. Time will tell you where you're spending your time effectively and where you're not. You'll see the results. And then we'll have a better idea as to where and who is responding to us.
Keith, you've provided a great overview, a solid overview for individuals who are looking for a job. And I got to tell you, one of the things that I see out there is the fact that people get frustrated and they don't continue the process. And I keep on saying, just keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. Keep asking the right questions. Keep talking. Because it can be frustrating. There's no question about it. It can be frustrating. But if they stick with the process, they will have success.
Yeah, don't wait. My favorite saying to candidates is, "Don't wait for success. Go ahead without it." And it's so hard to keep the morale up. It's so hard to keep the energy levels up when you feel like every day someone's just going to tell you no. And yes, that's just true. It is. And just know that. That's why you try to take the focus off, Dave, from did I get the interview or not get the interview, and really put the focus on managing the process. Did I create new targets today? Did I develop a new relationship? Have I reached out to a new relationship? Have I learned of some information or even a job that's not applicable to me, but that I can pass along to someone in my network? And I think if you focus as the successes of your day is on those efforts with trying to get to some conclusion, I think it's proven to be a lot easier to manage your morale that way than to manage your morale through, am I in an interview or not? How far did I get or not? And what are my prospects? I think that is, you know, it is hard because by definition, the interview process really is not to rule you in. It's to rule you out. As a hiring manager, I'm looking for reasons why you don't fit. Because the less I find of those, the least risk I perceive in hiring you, which means you're going to have a greater contribution to me, which means I'm more likely to give you the opportunity. So again, everybody thinks of interviewing as a way to be inclusive. It's really designed to be exclusive. I'm looking for reasons not to like you.
No, you're absolutely right. Keith, I got to thank you very much for being on the show today. You've provided a great amount of information. People want to see your website. They should go to...
They should go to www.mullen.careerworkspace.com.
That's awesome.
Mullen.careerworkspace.com. You'll see our offices, our services, and programs available to our corporate clients.
Great. Well, I want to thank you again for being on the show. Please tell your lovely wife and all five kids that Uncle Dave says hi, okay?
I sure will. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, buddy. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon. And now your HR tip of the week. How do you determine if a candidate fits the culture of your organization? One of the questions you might ask is, tell me about the best culture that you've ever worked in. What made it really enjoyable for you to work there? Where's the place where you felt you didn't fit in? And what was it like there? These are questions you could certainly ask to frame the question around the culture that the employee may be bringing to the organization, because it matters. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have Pam Green. She is the president of Power Project Institute from Washington, D.C. She's an HR consultant that used to be at SHRM, but is now going on her own and really making a difference in the keynote speaking world, talking about achieving success through people. Then we're going to be speaking to Martha Ramirez, director of the Western Region for SHRM's Member Services. She's going to talk about trends in the western half of the country for SHRM, what's important and hot at SHRM today, and why it's a volunteer family that you should be part of. That's the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.